This podcast was pre-recorded on August 14th.
I've received many questions on the issue of the NSA and its program of spying on Americans. Here's one question. The others are similar to it. Do you believe it to be moral for a person to expose secret government programs which widely violate the individual rights of the citizenry, even if doing so may expose tactics the government purports to use for national security purposes? Yes. A simple, unequivocal, absolute yes. I want to begin my answer by indicating what the NSA is doing and or soon will be doing and its political implications. And then I want to refer to the justification that they offer for this whole procedure. And I want to end with my analysis of Snowden. Is he a hero or a monster? But first, I want to go into what is it that the NSA and in general the government is doing? Now, for my edification, Steve Joe Levitt, who has been so helpful to me throughout my career, did a lot of research and wrote me a lengthy paper on what they are doing. And I am going to excerpt from him what he says and what some of the material he's unearthed. And he begins by saying, I have not changed my mind from my earlier email in which I claimed near certain knowledge of extensive and highly illegal spying on the content of telephone calls. There is a great deal of evidence all pointing one way. Bush, he goes on, started it, claiming the government's right to do warrantless spying on the phone calls of anybody it wanted to. And it's not a surprise that Bush started it because he was a Republican. And just about every evil in the United States, every major one, was anticipated and made possible by being initiated in a weak form by a Republican administration or Congress. 1890, the Antitrust Act, a conservative Congress. The New Deal, Herbert Hoover anticipated it and made Roosevelt see merely an extension of what he'd already done. And now we have Bush in the background, making this possible. So the pattern holds. Now, the media did not like Bush, nor therefore his anti-terrorist activities. So although Bush started doing this in secret, he was finally outed by the New York Times. And Congress set up new agencies and procedures. They were supposed to deal with the situation, make things better. And here's some example of what they are making better. Now, a quote from two senators, Ron Wyden, a Democrat from Oregon, and Mark Udall, a Democrat from Colorado. Quote, first here's a statement from Steve. Quote, they had classified knowledge of the program as members of the Senate Intelligence Committee. They warned in a December 27, 2012 floor debate that the FISA, that's pertaining to the secret court that allegedly is necessary to validate the spying, that the FISA Amendments Act had what both of them called, quote, a backdoor search loophole, unquote, for the content, not just what they call the meta information, but the actual content of innocent Americans who were swept up in a search for someone else. Now, here's a direct quote from Udall, a Democrat. As the law is written, there is nothing to prohibit the intelligence community from searching through a pile of communications which may have been incidentally or accidentally been collected without a warrant, to deliberately search for the phone calls or emails of specific Americans, unquote. Now, here is from an NSA whistleblower. There's more than Snowden. William Binney, a quote from him. He's from the inside. Was. Congressmen, judges, and the rest have all been duped by the intelligence agencies. They throw technobabble at the Congress and the judges, and those people have no idea what they're talking about. All they can do is listen to the agencies and take their word for it. They have no way of double-checking or verifying. The oversight by Congress and the courts is a joke, unquote. You would think that just from your general knowledge of the situation in the government. But here is a direct statement from someone in there who knows. And here is the bottom line from Steve. It is very easy for NSA officials to record multitudes of domestic phone conversations and emails without an individual warrant. They have dropped the old-fashioned idea of particularized suspicion and probable cause as a necessary criterion for wiretapping. Any American who thinks that the NSA, while having this capability, have not made use of it and are not going to make use of it for nefarious reasons is a fool or an idiot. Which I think is a weak or moderate statement. Here's just a few further pieces of information. This is from Congressman Gerard Nadler, and he revealed that in a secret briefing to members of Congress, he was told that the contents of a phone call could be accessed, an ordinary American's phone call could be accessed, quote, here's his words, simply based on an NSA analyst deciding that. The analyst decided it's important, that's it. And then he says, if NSA wants to listen to the phone, then one of its analyst decision is sufficient without any other legal authorization required. Here's another from a blog in the Petraeus case. Now listen to this one. This is quoting one of the blogs. In the Petraeus case, it became clear that the FBI had access to email accounts not related to a crime or even a possible crime, as well as broad information on hotel stays, on who stays at what hotel when they travel. It is clearly implied in the speed with which they knew who was where and who was moving. You do not know. I didn't know. I was astonished. The post office has admitted that it has a computerized program to know where every piece of mail is going and from whom it comes. Of course, the IRS is on top of the banks. Essentially, the banks are owned by the federal government, and they have no recourse if they're asked for information. The Obamacare, of course, will make all medical records accessible. They're talking now about putting black boxes in automobiles, allegedly to monitor responsibility of driving. But of course, they'll know then where anybody is going after they've made the phone call or sent an email about it. They're putting cameras now at intersections in many places to photograph, allegedly to catch them going through a red light, to catch where they're going, etc. It is not just that they are going after phone numbers. They are going after everything they can find and combining it into a massive computer system in Utah that they're building, where they will be able to pick out anybody and tell you what he is doing, what he's thinking, where he's going. Now, how close is all of this to the novel 1984? The difference in 1984 was that they had the spying device in the house. How long before the technology enables them to embed it outside the house? And how long before the citizens get to the point, where the education is continually debased, where they believe that's necessary for the public good? I don't say that's happening right away. I said that this is a giant, giant, giant step in the direction of totalitarianism. I would have written my prediction about the future, about the time frame, differently and dim if I had an idea that they already had a program of this magnitude and that nobody in government was touching them. If they were to achieve the full program, and we know that there are spies who can detect all this and more, what is the result got to be on the citizens? It has to be a dominant feeling of fear, of apprehension. The government acts capriciously. You don't know what's coming next. And they know enough about you to validate any claim by taking whatever out of context. Can you get together with some friends or like-minded people and, make a, quote, plot or conspiracy to try to stop this and overthrow it? Well, they'll know everything. Who you phone, who you meet, who you write, how you drive. What's going to happen in a case like that? What are the penalties that they can visit on you if you try to protest? Blackmail, what kind of threats? The withholding of medical care, auditing of your accounts, deciding like they did already with the IRS to penalize conservatives, taking away your guns, the assault on the Second Amendment. It is a methodical attempt to paralyze and incapacitate the public and disarm them at the same time, psychologically and physically. And it is happening before your eyes, and it has no opposition. And I just ask you this. How do you think the American colonists would have been able to declare war against George III if he had simply the combination of eyes and ears on every person, having stripped them of their weapons? You think there could have been an American Revolution? Well, that is happening right now. It's happening. I don't say they're now ready to cash in on it, but they have made tremendous strides that I would never, ever have predicted. It's so fast. Now let's turn to how do they justify this program? Of course, they deny altogether everything that I've said. First, they say, we don't really do that. We would never do that. And anyway, if we do that, to the extent we do that, it's because it's necessary to fight terrorists. And then they go on, there's 10 cases or 50 cases where we have saved the country from disaster by following this policy. Of course, we can't give an example because we don't want to reveal our methods to the terrorists. Well, how do we know? Well, we're, government officials, and we have all this equipment, and nobody can test us. You have to take, as President Obama has said, how can we have a country if you don't trust those who govern you? Now, suppose you ask, if you want to capture certain terrorists, and you want to check the phones of people, specific people that you think have a potentiality of being their assistants, especially if they're in contact with people in the Mideast, that's no problem. But if you think, I'm going to help myself get Mr. Abdullah or whatever, by studying every record and everything about every American, that is ridiculous. It's, first of all, it's like finding a needle in a haystack. It can't possibly work. It's an utterly senseless procedure if finding terrorists is what you want. If you are serious about fighting terrorists, you do not ignore and refuse to take the only step that will stop them, and that is to declare war on the ideology that they represent and to do so not by argument but by war, physical war. There is no other way to stop these rampant, aggressive, coming to be nuclear countries if we think we're going to do it by sanctions and conversation. We have to take the country or countries that are the most central, the engine of this Islamic assault, and bomb them with the most powerful weapons we have, including nuclear. And number one is Iran. I've discussed this in detail in other places, and I won't repeat it. But if we do not do that, if they can get away with what they're doing, and we turn the other cheek and the other eye, then there's nothing that can possibly save this country. Instead of that, Obama not only wants to, quote, negotiate with them, he's going out of his way to minimize the fact that there are terrorists. He made the FBI and other agencies remove from their files all reference to terrorists, Islamic fundamentalists, etc. When this creep soldier, some officer, killed all these people at Fort Hood, they refused to characterize it as terrorism. It's classified as, quote, workplace violence, unquote. They are trying to disguise it, let alone to fight it. How can you say the government, which doesn't even want to admit that there is such a thing, is spying on and stripping the whole country of everything personal and private about them because it's so eager to get at terrorists? That is the most fantastic, fantastic big lie ever in history, as far as my understanding is concerned. The biggest big lie, and the fact that they get no opposition, in fact, get applause from most quarters, is extremely dangerous. Now, it's obvious to me, as I've indicated to you, what they need it for has nothing to do with terrorism. It's part of the campaign that I've talked about to achieve the goal that I talked about. Although there may also be another factor, this is one little quote, although this is not a central one, but it just gives you an idea what these crusaders for liberty against terrorism, quote, NSA whistleblowers say they listened in on private conversations of servicemen stationed overseas and also of journalists and aid workers. Often the only interesting conversation was pillow talk, which excited them and which they shared among themselves. That's when they could take time off from covering up Benghazi. Now, what about, I keep saying there's no opposition. What about the Republicans? Surely they stand for individual rights and individual liberty and will be horrified. Well, a few are horrified, but the great majority, the leader of the party that set the policy, absolutely refuse to criticize. They praise the NSA program. And the reason is 100% political. They have no interest in what the subject is. They have only the interest, how is it going to affect them in the election? And the Republicans simply take this view. If we come out against the NSA, it's going to look like we're anti-government. They call us all the time anti-government. And here we're taking something that people say is so crucial to our safety and coming out against it. We'll be accused of crippling the war effort, of wanting anarchy, etc. And we don't dare take that chance. We don't want to make ourselves vulnerable. And that's it. That's the sole reason. And for that very reason, they don't attack anything that can, quote, make them look bad. Make them look bad to whom? To the media and the Democrats, who would make them regard them as bad no matter what they did. I mean, they're afraid to defund Obamacare. They vote against it in the House, you know, regularly, but they know that that's a dead end. It'll be vetoed. But they could defund Obamacare and really, really harm it, even if not stop it. Boehner and the rest of that horrible Republican crew, that phony, hypocritical Republican crew, absolutely will not allow even a vote on the subject because it affects the image that he wants to portray. So that is the response. That is the fight. There are a few good conservatives, but as a national force, this is what you see. Okay, now let's just conclude with Snowden. Many people have said, I like his action, but he is no hero. He should not be acclaimed or admired. He's a Chinese agent, or he's a Russian agent, or he's anti-American, he's trying to destroy our country, etc. Now, I want to absolutely reject, even if it's true that he's a Chinese Russian agent and reporting to Mars for the destruction of the Earth. I think he took an epical, important action, as important as any, in exposing what's going on and making people think this totalitarian government has to be fought. And to me, it is inconsistent, logically inconsistent, to praise an action to the skies while not praising or even denouncing the man who performed it for performing it. No matter whose agent he is, he has done a great service to this country, much more important than any help that he gives to China and the rest of them. We denounce Obama for his actions, regardless of his motives. And this is not just a theoretical issue. If we do not publicly esteem these whistleblowers, if we debate and attack and reject them, we are withholding from them a crucial element, a moral sanction in encouraging future ones to come forth. And our only hope here is to see them come forth continuously. We have to defend and encourage that. I say Snowden is a hero. I repeat, I say Snowden is a hero. He's deserving of great admiration. He saved, so far as possible, a real value on the face of great risk and pain. And what I call a real hero here is not, he's a hero across the board. He's Howard Roark or John Gould. A hero can be used in a more delimited way. It can mean someone who saves or achieves a great value in the face of risk and pain. That doesn't say all the rest of his character. It doesn't even say why. It says he is doing it. Now, for example, take a simple example. A man has a drug problem and he wants to cure it. And he goes into rehab. And he's having all the withdrawal symptoms, and he fights it. And he says, no matter how awful, I'm going to go through it. And he succeeds. I think that is heroic. I don't know what he is in the rest of his life. I don't know whether he's doing it for whatever reason. To make somebody jealous or to, I don't know what. It doesn't make any difference. That action, that course of behavior, in the face of the negative, the pain is involved, is deserving of the term heroic. It simply acknowledges the value of what is done in the face of the risk. And given the massive threat to our lives that Snowden revealed, I can't see how you can withhold that title for him. And here's one last example. A man who rescues a drowning child from the sea is a hero, even if his motive is only to get his name in the papers. That does not alter what he actually did and what is admirable, regardless of his motive. Suppose, to take a fantastic example, we found out that Aristotle only wrote his books because he was jealous of Plato. And he wanted to get, he didn't really believe any of it, but he just kept disagreeing with Plato because he wanted to destroy the academy. So therefore, Aristotle wasn't a great man. He was just a conniver, a wheeler dealer. That would be insane. Even if he belonged to the ancient Greek equivalent of the mafia, he wrote those books, and they saved the West. You mean to tell me that is not heroic? This is bizarre. Now, I want to give you one happier note. I know I've gone way over long, but one happier note in conclusion, which gives me some hope. How do you pronounce this? Quinnipiac poll. Quinnipiac poll shows that by a 55-34% majority, American voters think Snowden is a whistleblower, not a traitor. Further, by 45-40, now say the feds have gone too far in restricting civil liberties in the name of national security, period. Now, that is not the great numbers, but it's a hell of a lot better than John Boehner and his friends. Thank you.